You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Olafur Arnalds. It's interesting where he's at with his career right now. He's both a highly prolific songwriter and composer, yet many people are much more familiar with his compositions than his actual face. After talking to him, I could tell that he probably likes it that way, and within this talk, we delve deep into his creative process towards his upcoming album, Remember, which is actually out now. Along with how the album was made, we go into how his numerous collaborations have influenced his art, how touring the world has made him a much better musician, and the self-playing piano with a mind of its own. This is the 405 Exchange with Olafur Arnalds. Enjoy. So there's so much I want to ask you. In previous, in previous interviews, you brought up that this upcoming album of yours is your Breaking Out of Your Shell album, and I'd really love to hear in your own words what that means to you.
Ooh. What does breaking out of a shell mean? I think for me, it's not like that literal. For me, it means just getting out of your habits, and it means taking my art into directions that maybe I always wanted to go in but felt a bit shy to do it. To just be able to express, to be on stage and be able to express the uplifting part of everything, that, you know, it's almost danceable, some of it, you know, like, and this is something I've done a lot with my other project, Chiasmos, and we toured around the world. And I just loved seeing audiences so happy and dancing and having fun. And going back to my solo stuff, I missed a little bit of that element. Like, I don't want to take it all the way there, because that's why I have Chiasmos. But yeah, I wanted me to break a little bit out and not always be the sad person on the piano.
That's a good endeavor to have. You know, believe it or not, my entryway to your music was actually a collaboration you did. It was what you did with Nils Fram, the Trans Friends project.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way it was for me is that a friend of mine sent me the video, and I watched that like late at night, and then I played it again immediately after watching it. But it was like, first I watched it and listened, and then the second time I just listened to the audio. And I really did find myself floored with that, because it's one of those things where like a friend of mine just went like, watch this, with no other pretense or no other explanation. It was just like, you have to check this out.
This is a commitment. It's like 45 minutes.
Yeah, and it really does grab you. And then what was interesting with that is that like, I was aware of your name but not aware of your music. So then after experiencing that, I found myself working backwards with your work and like listening to a lot of your work from there. I feel like from that collaboration you did with Nils, you as an artist have changed quite a bit. At least, I feel like that experience affected you. Would you say that's fair to say in some ways?
Absolutely. And we did so many things together. I think we both learned a lot from each other from these, I don't know, was it 4 or 5 EPs that we did in total? I don't even remember.
Wow.
But at that period, we were staying together a lot. Like, I would go to Berlin and stay at his place, or he would come to Iceland and stay at my place, and I think for both of us that was a big growing period, because we were both finding our place in art, and this kind of music was becoming like just starting to get a little bit more popular, and we were both a little bit searching, maybe like, what is the strongest message we can send with the art we do. And meeting each other in that period, at least for me, was very influential, to have someone who understands everything that I don't want to say going through, because that sounds like it's bad, but like what I'm thinking about at that time, and what just to be able to talk about it with someone and get this creative response from someone, that definitely shaped my decision making for sure, and just the art that I make. Yeah.
That's really beautiful to hear. And then what was really interesting for me as a music fan and coming a fan of your work was going backwards and then forwards with your work. and seeing that, I mean, I'm sure you're always asked about this, but it's hard not to acknowledge it. Collaboration is such a mainstay of your career in a way that's very different to, in contrast to other artists, I feel, in a very way particular to you. And it's not just with musicians as well. It's also with like writers and directors and producers and people of various walks of life. I wonder, tell me what it was like then to start working on this new album and knowing that your name was going to be on it. And like it's your project now, essentially. Like, what was it starting off on that point?
It's first of all nerve-wracking. Well, after just a while, because the last time I just did something with only my name on it was a while ago, because you know, I did For Now and Winter, but that was even having a vocalist on several songs, and I even worked with Nico Muli on several songs. So even that wasn't fully solo. So everything that I did since then has been collaborations with Niels, Chiasmos, or Island Songs, which was a fully collaborative project, and then deciding to go and say, all right, it's time for me to do me now, it's something that makes you a little bit nervous, because you start to almost rely on other people, or you believe that you need other people at that point, because it's been such a while since you did it alone. So my approach to it actually became to embrace the collaborative fact, to realize that it doesn't stop being a collaboration just because your name is the only name on it. Music is always a collaborative venture, even though it doesn't feature anything else, or like there's no featured artist on it. I cannot make my music without, for example, the string players that are here with me today. They play on the album. The album wouldn't exist without them, so they become collaborators. I cannot do it without my, you know, the drummer that plays on there, or like all of these people around me that I've made friends with and became colleagues with over the last 10-15 years. They are all collaborators in their own way, and I decided to approach the album then by embracing that and realizing that my role in this whole thing is not that I'm the musician. I am the art director in a way. Like, my role is to pick the right people around me, because I'm gonna have to have other people whether I want to or not. So my most important role here is to make sure that those people who are involved are the people that I want to make that art with, that will influence it in a good way, and most importantly, people that I want to spend time with.
Yeah, because that is a big factor as well. People you want to spend time with, particularly reflected touring element, that is a big factor in your life as well. I mean, along with a lot of the compositions that you make, you do tour quite a fair bit.
Yeah. Well, we're about to. It just started, but it's going to be now 1.5 years on the road, and picking the right people for that is, you know, a lot of bands who play the kind of size shows that I do, they just go to a production company. They basically pay us on to the production company, and the production company takes care of everything. And they usually do it very well. But when I've entered tours with these artists, there's always like the band and then the crew. You know, these are two separate worlds, because the production crew is used to working together and they're friends, and then the band is totally separate. But I went and I talked to every single person myself and kind of interviewed them before the tour.
Really?
All the way down to like the backline people. And yeah, I just think it's so important that if you're going to spend the next 1.5 years on tour buses with these people, that they are people that you're going to get along with, that you're gonna enjoy working with. And as a result, I think everyone in the crew feels like they're a part of something. They were not just hired to do a job, I think. Like, nobody's feeling like that in my crew. We're all part of creating something.
I don't want to get too wishy-washy, but like, hearing all that, it just makes me feel like all those elements combined results in a very holistic experience. And I wonder, for you, would you say, I mean, I would imagine a lot of your collaborations and this being an extension of that, this kind of just facilitates a really good environment, really.
Absolutely, and I think that you will see that, the audience will see that as well. First of all, in the way that we interact on stage, me and the band, because we're friends, A couple of friends who were at the show last night, they mentioned like one of their favorite moments was when I think one of the violins player made like a slight mistake, and they're all looking at each other and laughing and then giving each other cues and like having a lot of fun playing together as friends. And you could also see that in the fact that the sound engineer who's at the front of house feels comfortable to actually make a joke into my in-ear in the middle of the show, you know?
Yeah.
And I repeated that joke out loud, and I, you know, people went up to the sound engineer afterwards and bought him a drink. Like, it's a big family, and I think the audience sees that and appreciates that and feels that in the set. Like, it adds to the experience of the show. It doesn't feel dry. It feels like every piece of the puzzle is there, you know, every person on the crew is an artist, yeah. No matter what their job is.
That's beautiful. I want to jump in and ask you a bit about your music, particularly looking into Remember, the first track you released off the album. I'm really curious because I feel like what's interesting about your music is everything is so considered in both how you approach it and how you put it out into the world. What was it about this track that you made wanted to be the first track people would hear from the project?
I like that question, because there is like a lot of thought process behind that track being the first track.
Yes.
I think it's not necessarily my favorite track on the album. It sometimes is, but I felt that it was important to release it first because it sets the tone for the album. And it's the first track on the album as well. And it was the first track that I wrote for the album. So it literally set the tone for everything that came next. And I spent such a long time on it. I spent 3 weeks just to kind of get the basic structure down every day in the studio, going in many circles, like to find the sound. And it almost made me crazy because I knew that whatever that sound would end up being, that track, would be the sound of the rest of the album. I just felt it like this is a good track. It's probably going to be a single, so everything I will do after this, I will be trying to match this, like the standard of this.
Wow. So, no pressure.
No. And it was so annoying. Like for 3 months after, I couldn't write a track that was I felt was as good as this one. But they were all trying to be this one, you know. And the track starts with just solo piano, which is very much in the vein of the solo piano pieces from my previous albums. Then this kind of new sound of a textural orchestra comes in, which is a little bit new. Then the third thing that comes in is the self-playing pianos, which is really dictating the whole sound of the album. And the fourth thing that comes in is like this breakbeat drums. And I felt like it was a good way to bring the listener into my new world, to kind of just take them from the old world and bring them into the new one. And at the end of the song, I actually take everything else out and leave just the drums, just like say, all right, this is what we're doing now.
Yeah, it does feel like, I mean this in a good way, it feels quite brave for you to do that, because it feels so different in contrast to all the things you've done before.
I always feel weird calling these kind of things brave, because I'm literally just sitting in front of a computer. Like, there's no real danger in anything.
Yeah, it does almost make it sound like you're slaying a dragon or something.
I'm just sitting in front of my computer for 5 days straight, like...
Knowing this then, knowing that this song like was such a laborious process, I'm curious in regards to how you typically work. Do you find that your songs change a lot in between the writing and recording phase? Because I reckon there is like a good fair bit of writing you do before you ever bring a song into the studio.
I write in the studio.
Typically?
Like, yeah. Yes, typically I record. So a lot of the recordings you hear, especially piano recordings, are the first me like sketching the idea down. That I usually try to sketch it down in a way that I can use it on the final product. So because I have my own studio and it's nicely facilitated for recording, I can actually, and I like to work that way. Distracting.
Oh no, it's okay.
Somebody just opened the door.
Just the door.
Hello. That because sound is such a big part of like how elements sound is such a big part of the composition, I believe. So you don't only have a melody. A melody is nothing but a sequence of notes, right?
Yeah.
So what makes it into something that means something? It's when it is a sound, when you hear it out of a speaker. So then the recording process, the like, what mics do you use? What, how does the piano sound like? All of that is equally important to the song as that sequence of notes which creates the melody. So I always approach writing in that way, that I have to write into the microphones, in a way.
That's really interesting, though, because I feel, and I'm sure you're definitely aware of this and people point it out to you, but there's so many musicians who almost feel like, not that they wouldn't want to, but they almost feel like they can't do it in that way. Like, I almost feel, I feel like a lot of musicians I've talked to, they almost think, like, doing it that way would leave so much room for error. Like, there's almost, like, a form of confidence within your own abilities to allow yourself to do that. Do you think that's almost too much of a stretch to say? Or?
No, I don't think this is for everyone. I think for a lot of people this doesn't make sense. But I started as a recording engineer and then became a musician.
That's true.
So, of course, I was making music all the time, but like that was my job before my job was being a musician. So I always approach things from that perspective. So it just makes sense to me. And of course, I also admit that I'm speaking from a privileged position, that I do have a studio with the quality microphones and quality equipment that I can record stuff that can be of high enough quality to end up on an album. I mean, most people write first on a laptop and then have to rent out a studio for 5 days to record it. Like, that's a totally different story, and I can see my own privilege in that.
Yeah.
So this doesn't work for everybody, and it's not possible for everybody, but it works for me, and yeah. Of course I'm writing melodies all the time, like when I'm on tour and stuff, but nothing becomes structure or a real idea until I'm in the studio.
That's really good to know. One of the big things I really wanted to ask you about, knowing that I was going to talk to you, and it really is something that kind of blows my mind away, is the Stratus software, the element of the self-playing pianos. I would love to hear you go into that, because it's one thing to read it, but I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this.
So, to just explain it very shortly, it is... There's no short explanation.
It's so, okay, I'm sure at this point people are pretty engaged, so we could just jump right into it.
If they're still listening, they'll listen through this. It is a software that manipulates note input data. So at the start, I play, let's say I play a MIDI keyboard. That's like the most simple version of it. So I can play a chord on the MIDI keyboard, C minor, for example. Those notes go into the software, and out of the software goes a rhythmical texture based on that chord that I played. And the software sends it out to two self-playing pianos, so the notes move on their own, I don't have to sit there, and they just kind of generate those textures constantly as long as I'm inserting some things into it.
Wow.
So that's the very basic of it.
I guess the obvious next question in regards to that is
why?
Yes. Pretty much, yeah. Like, I mean, because it's not... I mean, this with all due respect, that doesn't sound like an obvious thing to come up with. Like, what would you say was almost the genesis of this idea?
All good ideas are an accident. So this one came about literally from an accident. Actually, I had a car accident.
Oh, wow.
I hurt my some nerves in my spine, and I couldn't use my right hand for a while, like, because there were some like pinched nerves. So I couldn't play piano, and I was talking about these pianos, these self-playing ones, with a friend of mine, and he jokingly said, well, you should just get one of those if you can't play piano anymore and your problems will be solved. And we just laughed about it, but then, you know, these ideas just kind of, they'd never leave your head, like,
yeah.
Wait, what if I would? Huh. And what could I do with that? Like, I've seen these pianos before, but I've always just seen them as replacements for your hands.
Yeah.
Like, it can play the song on its own. But what? This is an amazing technology, so what can you actually do with that? And what I found interesting as a path to take there was to figure out how you can manipulate your creative impulses if you change the way the piano feels as an instrument. So you're still playing the piano, but you're not touching the piano. So what does that do to your thinking as you're composing something? So normally, like the thought process in writing a song or improvising in the most simplest term would be you press one note on the piano, you hear that note, so it's a C. You hear a C, and your brain kind of digests that and subconsciously starts thinking, oh, after a C, I could play an E to make the start of this melody. But what if I'm playing the piano and when I press the C, all these other things start happening? What does my brain think? Like, what is my brain thinking I should press next? If I don't only hear the C, but I also hear these other notes and these rhythms, that's completely destroying anything we know from improvising or composing on an instrument. So that's the idea of this. It's not the notes move on their own.
Yeah.
It's not any of that. That's a gimmick. It's fun for 10 seconds or 10 minutes, and then you have to look deeper. Like, what can we do with this technology that really has an impact on our creative output?
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, what you're describing is combining an intuitive nature along with interactivity, because it very much requires the organic human brain to have a response to it.
Yes.
That's quite amazing.
And you're just manipulating the process. So I'm really into this this flow theory of, I can never pronounce the guy's name, but it's an old scientist that came up, Czech Smiley, it's like the wrong pronunciation of his name. Where it's this theory that, like, when we enter this hyper creative state, it's called flow. It's that feeling we all get, whether we're artists or doing any other job, that we all get when we just sink so far into what we're doing that we just feel like we wake up 5 hours later and we've done so much work we barely remember doing it. You know this feeling from writing, I guess, that you just get so in the zone. So that's flow state. And I, after reading his book, I was really thinking about how can you manipulate yourself into flow state? Like, how can you more easily find that flow state? And this was one of those things. Like, if you manipulate the creative, I don't know, cognition response or whatever, you can kind of shift your brain into that and get totally lost in things again. Because flow state requires a certain challenge or a certain element of something that you don't expect in order to find it.
And a matter of surrender as well, like allowing yourself to allow it to happen.
That's the other thing, yeah.
You know, something that really blew me away with jumping back into that in regards to the album, and it really did ping my mind. And when you said it, you said that when you started with this track, you knew that it was going to set the tone for the rest of the album. I'm curious, now that the album is finished and you've had a chance to live with it, at least for a little while, did that end up being the case with the other tracks on the album? Like, are they quite reflective of what Remember ended up presenting to you?
Yes, I think they are. Not necessarily sound-wise, like, you won't find other beats like that or such huge rises, but absolutely, like, the feeling of it runs through the album. So I think it sets the tone atmosphere-wise, like, that there are surprises, there's a lot of uplifting moments, and there's unexpected things there. So it really did that, yeah.
Now, I have to ping you on that, because that's one of my favorite things to ask people about. Because something that blows me away of knowing that you have an album coming out is knowing that it's yet to be heard and it's about to be heard by a lot of people. Would you say for you that there's a particular track on the album that you're really keen on having people hear?
Apart from the two singles that are already out, I'm curious what people will think about some of them, because I'm even on the fence about some of them.
Really? So even at this stage now, if it being over?
Oh yeah. Always.
I appreciate the time that you've given me. I only have one more question for you, and it's a bit of a special, more of a question for me rather than the people. I'm sure the people enjoy it. Because, you know, live performance, we talked about how that's a big element of what you do. You've recently played quite an amazing show, at London's Royal Albert Hall. What was that like for you? Because that room is just quite an amazing room.
Yes, that was one of my favorite things to do ever in my life, was to play in that room. It surprised me, that room. Like, I was nervous for the show beforehand, because it was so big, and it was like, it's like always like a high point in one's career to play that room. But once I entered the room, it actually feels small.
It really does.
Like the way that it's structured, it feels like playing to 1,000 people, not 5,000 people. And that made it such a special experience to play, because it feels intimate, but yet you have 5,000 people there, but it feels like playing like tonight or something. And also just personally for me, a lot of my family, who are, bless them, very proud, and they flew over from Iceland to see me, and a few friends flew over, and so it was also just a very special night for me to be there in that room and having, you know, all these people that I care about there. And yeah, I cried on stage that night.
Did you? It's hard not to. Look at it. That's really beautiful, man. Well, it must have been interesting, because for people listening who might be unfamiliar with the venue, a good portion of the time musicians have to play in the round. That must have been quite interesting, having to do the bit of the political wave and all the people around you.
Yeah, that was one of the first times we did that, but we've actually done it a few times after. I started to really like the round setup.
Oh, yeah.
We were actually just doing it 2 days ago in Montreal.
I feel like that really fits with your music well. Thank you for finding the time to chat. It's a really special game just to talk to you, honestly.
Thanks for this.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Pleasure.
Thank you.